Good afternoon.
Well, it's my pleasure today to talk to you about some of the findings from my dissertation research. My dissertation research involves planting pollinator-attracting plants nearby vegetable crops to see if we can increase the yield of these crops. And our preliminary data is showing that annual and perennial pollinator-attracting plants are differentially affecting the yield of cucumbers and habanero peppers. So why research this project? Some of the rationale behind it is that, as we know as horticulturalists, poor pollination has been associated with the reduction in yield and quality of fruit and vegetable crops. But, you know, on a larger scale, we are... Excuse me? Can you hear me better now? So on a larger scale, you know, we're bringing in honeybees and honeybee hives for, like, almond crops and things like that. However, on a smaller scale, these small-scale farmers and home gardeners might not have the capacity or the feasibility to have a hive at home or on their farm. So we're investigating to see if we can have these pollinator-attracting plants to bring in nearby pollinators that are nearby. So that's kind of looking at this from a horticultural perspective, but we also wanted to look at this more from a wildlife services ecological perspective. And as we know in the news, the honeybee is experiencing reduction in populations from various reasons. But what we might not know is that other pollinators, specifically native bees, are also experiencing a rapid decline. And a lot of this is due to large-scale monoculture farming, inhospitable field conditions, and other various things as well. Some of them are associated to diet and nutrition. So just like us, if we all ate McDonald's every day, we're not going to be healthy. Same thing with bees. They don't really want to eat the same thing every day either. And what you might not know is that pollen is a major protein source for bees, and nectar is a major carbohydrate source. So the companion plants we're hoping brings in supplemental nutrition for the bees. So our hypothesis and overall goal from a horticultural perspective, we're going to be having the strategic and methodical placement of bee-attracting plants and cultivated landscapes near vegetable crops to see if we can attract nearby pollinators and thus increase the yield. And then more from our wildlife services perspective, we're hoping that the pollinator-attracting plants will serve as supplemental nutrition source for the pollinators and hopefully increasing bee health and thereby their populations. Specific objective of what I'll talk to you about today is we're evaluating the impact of pollinator-attracting plants, perennial pollinator-attracting plants and annual pollinator-attracting plants, and comparing them to see which works better. So for our experimental design for this problem, we came up with 9 plots. They're 40 feet long, 25 feet wide. It's on a field site about 3 acres in size. It's 3 acres in size to have proper distance in between the plots so we don't have cross-contamination of the pollinators. One of the treatments, our perennial treatment, has each of our plots have 3 rows. The perennial treatment has 2 rows, which will have has the vegetable crops in it, and the other row is just a row of perennial pollinator-attracting plants. We're growing habaneros and cucumbers, the variety Market More cucumber and our Tamu mild habanero. Our annual treatment consists of three rows as well, but our annual plants are going to be interplanted with the cucumbers and the habanero peppers. Our remaining 3 plots were used as a control, and we're actually replicating this experiment 3 times seasonally, but I'm just talking to you today about our first season results. So as I mentioned, the crop species we picked were from the cucurbit and solanaceous plant families. Why did we choose these? Because the literature shows that enhanced pollinators nearby enhances the yield of these plants. And like I said, we chose the cucumber and the habanero pepper. So our perennial plants that we used for our investigation was Phyla nodiflora. I'll show you pictures of these here in a minute. It's known to attract many pollinators, and it also attracts native bees and honeybees. Berichia, which is a aster, coastal aster. It's a known nectar source and for bees and butterflies. And then we have mint, our Salvia augusta Dulberg, attracts native bees and honeybees as well. And then we have our local Eisenhardia texana, which is a nectar source for bees and butterflies, and is also a larval host for our dog-faced butterfly. Quickly, I'll show them to you. Here's our phyla nodiflora. It has common name frog fruit, but we mainly know it as phyla. Here's our Berichia. Also the Salvia Augusta Duhlberg. It's a graveyard salvia. And then here's our Eisenhardia texana. So here on the left you can see is our establishment year of our perennial plots. So the first year we didn't really see much pollinators around it just because it was needed that time to establish. But in the second year you can see it's quite established and attracting several pollinators. And I'll talk about this here in a minute. Our annual plants that we use borage, Borage officinalis, attracts native bees, honeybees, pollen, and a nectar source. Cosmos, again, attracting honeybees and bumblebees. And like I said, it's an important pollen and nectar source. So we have the pollen, our protein, and the nectar, our carbohydrates. We use basil as well, which is known to attract honeybees and a nectar source. And then our zinnia, Zinnia marylandica, which is a known pollen and nectar source as well. Here's our borage in the field. Also our cosmos with various pollinators on it. And our basil as well. This is actually the holy basil variety. And then our zinnia. There's no pollinators on our zinnia picture because we found that not many pollinators are actually visiting the zinnia, and we're kind of trying to figure that out. One reason is maybe it's because we use the double variety, and I think bees maybe not like the double variety. So our results, here's some partial ANOVAs. We divided our yield categories into two categories. As I mentioned before, our perennial treatments only had two rows of the vegetables in it. So we are actually would be comparing two rows of vegetables versus three and the other treatments. So on the left, we have our raw yield, which is just comparing the two of the perennial to the three of the control and the annual. And then the adjusted yield actually accounts for that missing row so we can better compare the results. But as you can see, we had statistical difference in the raw yield data between the three treatments and in the adjusted yield as well. And I'll talk a little bit more about this specifically here in a minute. For our habanero, same thing. We had statistical difference in our raw yield and in our adjusted yield. But particularly, the raw yield data found difference in all three treatment groups. But our adjusted yield, we found no statistical difference between the perennials and the control, but we did find differences between the annual and the control. And as I mentioned earlier, we're kind of attributing this to the establishment period required for that perennial row. So now, our latest findings, we're actually finding statistical difference in the perennial treatment. So our future objectives for this project, first, we're going to incorporate a cost analysis. So yes, we might be able to improve the yields for these farmers, but is it going to be enough to compensate their pocketbook for all this extra effort that they're doing for planting these pollinator-attracting plants? The one thing that's really not getting put into this that maybe should is the wildlife services aspect, and hopefully at some time we'll be able to kind of attribute an economic value to wildlife services. Speaking of wildlife services, one of the next things that we're going to be doing is examining the honeybee pollen to see what kind of protein sources they're using and maybe hopefully using some of our companion plants. And we will also be evaluating honey as well to see if there's any, all the primary nectar sources nearby. So next, also we're going to determine the visitation rate and the constancy of the flowers in our pollinator attracting treatments and see if they also subsequently are pollinating our vegetable crops as well. And lastly, we're trying to determine the effectiveness of the perennial row. So as I mentioned, right now we have one and three rows being replaced, but where is the cutoff? Can we maybe only replace one and six, for example, something like that? So we want to see where the drop in our significant difference in yield is going to be and see how many rows that we actually would have to replace. That's all I have for you today. I'd be happy to take any questions or comments. Yes, sir.
You said that you had separated these
Exactly. Gosh, there are probably, actually, I don't know the answer to that. At least 1,000 feet or so, 2,000 feet, but they're in a grid system, so they're all quite far away from each other, and then they're actually blocked on row as well. So, yes, sir. Yes, exactly, and that's kind of what we're finding with our annual treatments is we might be seeing competition for nutrients, crowding, etc. So, yes, we're evaluating other treatments to go along with now that we kind of have some of this preliminary data. Actually, one of the ideas that we're having is instead of right here, you'll see this is the perennial row on the left. And instead of interplanting annuals, we're thinking about maybe just doing one of our replacement rows with just annuals so that you can just go in and till and it won't be such an issue to deal with maintenance. Any other questions? Thank you.